Let us continue. My clock shows 8:26. Let us reconvene our deliberations for Department of Public Works. I believe we are still on facilities. We have a motion on the floor to approve the public works as presented. We have a second by Supervisor Berg. All those in favor say aye. We have one discussion here by Supervisor Berg. Go ahead.
Okay. I know we have a lot of talk about this here, but I would like to make an amendment to remove the ACC office renovation and other way up. That's what we tried.
So it's been presented, or a motion has been made by Supervisor Nudo, Facilities 5, which has a price tag of $900,000, to remove that particular item from the budget. Do we have a second? I see no second. The motion dies. We don't have a second. We're now back to the original proposition. Supervisor Rodriguez.
Thank you. I have a second for the project. I wanted some clarification. So Facilities 1, Jim, is this a project? This is the gas pump? That's the parking lot. I'll go in order, so I'll come back to when I was thinking of. This is the parking lot between Courthouse and Mount Arrow, correct? That's the only question I had on that. I frequent the DA's office pretty often, Courthouse pretty often, just my line of work. So I see the state of that.
This is for crack seal.
So $50,000 just for?
Yeah. Yep. Sound the light.
Okay, I'm just going to go back.
Which line item are we on?
This is Facilities 1, CIP, page 20.
Okay.
So this is here the most cost effective ways to replace a lot and extend the light. So what would be the total amount to replace the lot?
Running out the cracks of the beard and filling them with tar. It's for the buildings in between and the east side of the Long Arrow. That's one part.
So not really replacing
it?
No. It's the parking lot between the two buildings, Courthouse and Long Arrow building, and then the east side of the Long Arrow. That's one part.
That's all considered one parking lot?
Yep.
So what, do you have a number on actually replacing that? Or?
I don't.
So
it's not at that point to end the light. This is, we're saying it's going to step the light.
So just by doing ceiling, we can get another 20 years out of it?
And that might be a little ambitious.
It's immature. Okay, so I would just note that for future years, because that's totally different than what's in the CIP. The CIP says replace and extend the light for another 20 years. I just note that. And then Facilities 3, building improvements. Mike, if you want to speak to that, I feel like we spent a lot of money every single year on building improvements. And I know it's very broad, but I know you always have an answer as to what you have in mind. So what do you have in mind?
That's for all the buildings downtown that are in the facilities section. So Courthouse, Mullen Arrow, K-Camp, those are buildings. And it's for exterior door replacements, recarpeting, washroom remodeling, things like that.
And does this include the film?
The specific items in here are the K-Cab doors, Mullen Arrow doors, Courthouse remodeling the washrooms, that's 75 grand of it. In KCC doors, both the service doors out there and into the area here where the employees come in and the front doors. And it's a combination of a multiple of things that add up to $223,000.
Okay, and I've got no issue with that. I was just curious what those were. Which bathroom would be undertaken next year at the courthouse?
That would be the second and third floor washrooms.
Okay. And facilities nine. I was just wondering if I could have a copy of this report that it says in the project scope that was done. We had somebody come in and look at all the parking lots, give a report on that. If you guys have that, it doesn't have to be tonight, obviously, but something I'd like to take a look at. And then moving on, facilities, this is the safety building one. Gas pumps, Jim, is this something that we can charge back to the joint services of the city to replace the gas pumps?
Yeah, there's a limit. I think it's up to now. It started years ago. It started at, I think, $130,000, then it went up every year. So we can charge back up to, it's up to like $150,000 or $160,000 now.
So this may or may not.
It could be included in that chunk of money, yes.
And then the building improvement, same thing.
Same thing. There's a whole breakdown of...
What's in that breakdown? What do you got?
There's washrooms in the PSV. There's washrooms for $100,000. And then there's a grease trap. PSV.
Correct.
Does that add up to 113? Is that the number?
Yep.
Those two items.
And then last one for you. Building improvements at the job center, are those getting done? In the meantime, until if we end up moving, that gets us to that point, correct?
Right, it gets us to that point. It's kind of bare minimum stuff that just has to be done to buy us a couple more years.
All right, with that, I've got no other questions or issues. I still wish we weren't going to be adding that person to that lot, but regardless, obviously, we're in facilities. Thank you.
So we're at the point where there's deliberations. We've had a movement or a motion by Supervisor Velsky. Second by Supervisor Byrd to approve our facilities division. All those in favor say aye. Roll call beginning with Supervisor Belsky.
Aye.
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 It appears as though our facilities portion passes. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Okay, the call starts on page 13, and I'm going to let Chris Walton talk for a little while.
One pass the mic, please.
Okay. I just want to start out with, Walt is obviously living in the role. Anything that we spend, we have to cover with their own revenue. So we'll jump right in. Salaries increases are just the scheduled pay increases that they have for the year. They also include some increases in hourly pay rates for seasonal employees to help attract and maintain some of those guys to continue to come year after year. The contracted services, we have an increase in maintenance contracts and credit card fees. The last 2 years, we've seen an incredible amount of increase in play involved, and with that, obviously, comes higher expenses and credit card fees that go along with it. And in regards to the fixed, the large increases in the sales tax, which is the same reasoning that there's just that much extra income coming in, that there's extra sales tax paid as well. Looking at the revenues, you may look at 20 and 21 and say, why are we budgeting so low? We're just budgeting based on the expense level. The history shows us that this is pretty much what it costs to maintain the golf course at its current standards. And any revenue that we exceed the budget levels, we can put back into reserves, which we like to use about half of that to try and offset some of the other expenses or possibly finding
tale here of what's happened over the last few years. It's 2021. We have, right now we have over $1 million in our reserve. It's back then we had nothing. And over the course of those 3 years, we built up that money in the reserve. Plus, we have spent $1 million of other money that we made funding capital projects. And that was a request of the county board a few years ago, to start paying for your stuff, your capital, out of your earnings. We have. So next year's budget, there's $400,000 in capital, and we would like to take half of it and salt it away to work on future projects. I think Ray will probably talk about the golf project that is not in 22, but is in 23-24, and bond for $200,000. So I'll let Chris go back. I just wanted to tell people that we have been spending capital money out of reserves.
Sorry, Chris. Yeah, and the extra reserves also literally helps us for a rainy day. We can jump into 2022 capital projects. Is there any specifics that you would like to discuss before we go
over those? Supervisor,
thank you. I don't have anything in the capital, but for the contracted services, that's where you're including those merchant fees.
Correct.
Have we looked into passing that on to the golfers? Because I'm starting to see that more and more. I mean, like when I bought this water before PDAC tonight, off the vending machines, there's a thing there that says you use your credit card, it's a surcharge. Have we looked at doing that? Can we do that?
Those are things that we've looked at doing. And there's been a variety of things we've looked at over the years. So was it 2 years ago that we actually included sales tax? Or I should say we used to just include it into the $5 price and we covered the sales tax. And 2 years ago we changed that so that we actually now charge sales tax, so we're not kind of floating that money.
Right.
We continue to look at other little ways to tweak the revenue stream. That's one of the things we talked about. We decided not to pursue it this year, but it's one of the things that's on the table that we talk about every year when we talk about setting rates.
And what did we, of that $257,000 that was for this year, what of that was credit card fees?
Let me just add on to what Ray said, that I don't know how many places y'all go into and you charge stuff that the fee ends up separate. I don't see a lot of it. When I go in and buy something, the credit card fee is absorbed by the merchant. So they just put it in their price. That's what we've been doing in golf.
No, I understand that's what we're doing, but I'm starting to see it more and more now.
I'm not.
Where it's not even listed as a fee. What they're saying, and even on the vending machines up there, it's a discount, it's a cash discount. I mean, credit card fees add up. I mean, I assume we're probably paying somewhere 3% per transaction. That's a lot of money. I mean, that really adds up. And I know I heard stories from when the county did add the sales tax. You had some grumpy old timers that lost their minds. Well, tough. I mean, I'm sorry, but that's the cost of the economy that we're in right now and the economy that we're continuing to head in. You know, we're not Walmart, that's for sure. We're not a big box name store like where you would expect to not pay that credit card fee. So I think we look into that, and I would request that for maybe next month's meeting, and you guys could have a number for what we paid for the last several years of credit card fees. And then we have a real dollar amount of what could be passed on.
Year to date, which is pretty much the end of September, we've accumulated roughly $64,000. We had budgeted $60,000, so we've exceeded that before.
And so you're not far off from the budget. I'm not So, okay, nonetheless, I mean, we should be in the business of saving money where we can, and golf has done a good job at that, I'd say. This is somewhere where I think we can improve.
So you'd like to see credit card fees breaking down and more information on that, so we can get a measure in progress?
Yep.
Okay. Anything else for Supervisor Edwards? Supervisor Belsky, go ahead.
I just have one comment. Running an online store, you know that Authorize.net does all of the servicing fees, majority for MasterCard and Visa and everything. The bare minimum is 3%, so you may want to consider raising it because the average is 4. So, just my 2 cents.
All right, thank you for that comment. Anything else as we move along to this presentation? Anything else, Chris?
No, balance, you guys have anything specific on the CIP?
Supervisor Udall.
Hey, I believe you're saying there's $1 million in reserves right now?
Yeah.
If we got that much money in there, why can't we pay the full $424 and instead of buying $217?
So part of that, if you look even back to, like Jim said, that we've taken roughly $1 million out of reserves already, a lot of that is covering just equipment used to maintain the courses. I think I look back at it back to 2019, only roughly like $250,000 were used for actually the carpets and such. So if you kind of phase into 2023, you'll see that there's much larger projects that are out there, more prevalent to actually the course, including some irrigation and stuff, which I will let Dan just elaborate on.
Yeah, so there's as Chris indicated, there's a couple of big projects left that are mainly actually remaining from the original master plan that was put together about 2010. And what we're trying to do is not empty the bank account, because we do want to be able to substantially fund those larger projects so we can actually get them done. If you notice this year, we're not doing any big projects out there. There's still these things, 2010, so we're going on year 12, picking away at that master plan. We've done a lot, but there's still some big things left on the table to do. We don't want to have to bond for those entirely, and we think if we can continue to have solid years and cooperative weather, big thing, we're going to be able to put some money away into those reserves so we can substantially fund. I'm not going to say entirely fund, I'm going to say substantially fund those large capital improvement projects that will finish that master plan off in 2010. So that's why we're not emptying that out just to buy our standard equipment that we need to maintain the course.
Okay, because basically, I have a small problem, okay, which by the way, golf is doing great compared to what it was doing before, so but what we say is golf lady all that. Well, it's not really true because we're paying a debt service and it's in this case would be $270,000. You know, like Brookside is an old lady, but they pay their own debt fee, even though we borrow the money because of the funding, but they're responsible to make those payments. And the golf doesn't support that, right? So actually, there is no like money involved because we made that service and that money.
Right. You could clarify and say that there's no levy involved in any golf operations as there was in years in the old days. That's what there is no golf levy involved in operations. There is some levy to service the debt associated with the capital part of the loan. That's a fair statement.
And again, I believe we have a record year. Last meeting here. So now the $1 million was taken into consideration. We were able to put some money in reserves this year, or it's what we have right now, and by the end of the year we might even have more money in there.
We sure should. In reserve, we want to build that through those reserves up so we can, like I say, fund some of those.
Getting a projection how much it's going to be at the end of the year.
I'm not going to go on an electric
guess.
painting around the back room would like to speak on this. Give her a microphone, please.
I'll try to speak loud. Can you hear me? But we're looking at reserves. We don't want to say, we think we're going to put $500,000 in reserves, so we will take $250,000 of that next year's budget, and then get hit by a whole bunch of rain and find out we didn't hit our target, and now all of a sudden we're pulling from reserves we don't have. So best practices say, wait until the year has closed. We add that money to reserves. We have that year audited to make sure that that money really is in reserves, and then not this year, but next year, we look to see what can be funded with reserves that we know that we have versus an estimate that could be incorrect.
You're saying that's done from a financial accounting standpoint just to make sure things are not misrepresented. Anything for this request?
No, not really. Who have been met, but since the Gulf Department basically kind of came so far, you know, this way from where it was, I guess I can leave it with their reason. I'm going to support it.
Supervisor Morgan, do you have a comment?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the idea of the borrowing or bonding, I guess to piggyback off the supervisor new, we have six other public golf courses privately owned that we compete against. Those people pay their loans back. They aren't financed by the county. Now, if the county wants to finance them, I guess it'd be great to have them. But, and I guess in county union there as well, except for the problem. Brookside competes against private industry, just as the golf course does. I don't think there's any other county facility, function, department that competes against private entities. Those are the two that do. We tell Brookside they got to pay their loans back. But we tell the golf course, we're your sugar daddy, we're going to pay them back. And I believe that has to stop. We have to make sure they can stand on their own. If we keep financing them, if they can't stand on their own, then why are we in the golfing business? Just lease it out to the major golf courses that do lease out and let them handle it all. Let them pay us, and then it becomes a net. Then it isn't on the levy. Then it is actually income producing. Because when I'm looking at the expenses and the revenues for next year, they're putting in there, they're going to make $1 million less next year on golf, on the greens. They're going to go from $4.1 million projected this year to $3.1 million next year. Well, that's going to, what's that going to do to your reserves? And that's providing, I guess you're having an average year, because last year we did 2020, $4.1 million, pretty similar to what we did this year. So if you're saying what we're having is an aberration, and that's not what we expect, then I think we're going to be in deep trouble come 2023 and 2024. Who knows? Completely weather-related, I understand that. But my concern is that golf should be standing on its own 100%. They can then set their fees to pay back the loans that they say they need that they will pay back, just as Brookside does. And I just think it's the proper way to run the golf course. Compete. If you're going to compete against the private industry, you should not have somebody paying your debts. You should be paying your own. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. Any other discussion among committee members on this particular golf budget?
I
Supervisor Nelson.
So, why do we fund golf? I mean, has it always been like that since Supervisor Morgan wrote it up? It's just always been that way?
There's a number of challenges in making an apples-to-apples comparison with private and public courses. And trust me, you don't want to hear all of those reasons tonight. But there's a number of challenges. Supervisor Norgan identifies one of the arguments as it relates to the capital side of things. Private courses do borrow for making capital improvements, and they pay those things back. They also have some flexibility that we don't have in a whole bunch of different things that are restraints on our operation. We set our prices, they can set their prices, there's a lot more flexibility, I'm going to say, in how they set their prices that we don't have as a public entity. There's also then kind of the philosophical part of municipal golf has always filled a role for providing golf to folks that we're not the highest priced golf in the area. We know that. And we intentionally are not the highest priced because we want, as a municipal golf course, to be able to offer a premium experience for a less than premium price. And that's exactly what Dan has created up at both our courses. So there's a bunch of stuff that goes into that. The short answer to your question is that, no, historically, the capital equipment and everything was bonded 100%. There wasn't any contribution from reserves because there was no reserves to work with. This is a conversation that's really only kind of come into fruition in the last couple of years because we're actually, again, depending on weather and everything else, we're able to start to consistently, it appears, generate revenues above and beyond their operating expenses. If we continue to do that, these kinds of conversations and how much we put towards our capital from our reserves versus how much we bond for those capital improvements, that'll just have to be part of the conversation so we can start to sort that out. So, but historically, all stuff was bonded for. There wasn't anything paid out of reserves.
That wasn't really, I guess my question is, why golf? I mean, why not hand lighting? Why not roller skating? I mean, you know, we're really focused on providing a service to a certain group of people at the county expense, right? I mean, but let me finish, because he makes a good point about Brookside. We are competing against the private sector, but we are with golf as well. So unless they can fully fund themselves, you know, it's kind of elitist to be golfing. And that's just me.
Yeah.
That's just me. Because I don't golf. But we're not catering to other activities or other athletics. So I can see his point. You do a great job, Dan, you really do. And I think the golf course has come a long, long way. But I think we've got to change our mindset maybe down the road, looking at, do we cater to the specific groups of people at the county's expense?
So I would only go back to, there was a study done by, we worked with Carthage about, 8 years ago, maybe 10 years ago?
Maybe now, 6 years.
And we had them do an economic evaluation, because there's sports economists that basically, you know, they look at sports stadiums and what the investment, return on investment is for a community. They do the same thing for golf. And we had one of those done a few years ago to show what the net gain to the entire community is. If nobody ever sets foot on a golf course, the value, real value that's brought to the community. So we had that study done because these questions, they're asked quite often. So we've got that information. We can get you that information. So there's a lot more to it. And that's just the economic side of it and what value golf in the community brings to the overall community. That's the one piece. The other piece is, back in the day, like you had said, golf's kind of elitist. It was kind of the reverse. It wasn't elitist. If you were a person of a certain color or a certain religion, you didn't get to golf.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why municipal golf actually was first brought into fruition in, 1920s or so, because there was a whole bunch of folks. If you weren't the right kind of folks, you didn't get to golf. So that's kind of the foundation for municipal golf, and it still continues that tradition. It's available to everybody. It's a very democratic kind of an operation. So
I think that can be said about really any sport, and I don't want to get into the discussion tonight because we're here to approve a budget, but it is, I think, a worthy topic of conversation to have at some point, because if we're going to compete the way we're competing with other professional sports, maybe we look at overall what would draw in the most visitors, the creating the most destination, and maybe it is golf. But I don't want to continue this discussion. I just thought it was very interesting. So maybe we can have it in the future. Thank you.
Supervisor Rodriguez.
Thank you. Ray, can you elaborate? You said that private courses have more flexibility than we do. And one instance that you specified prices. Are you just referring to having to come back to us to adjust prices?
Right. As a business operation within a public confines, you still have to have, there's a lot more approvals. Dan can come up with the greatest business plan in the world that he thinks is the greatest business plan, but it's still got to be approved by a whole bunch of folks for that to actually come into fruition. The private sector, it's whoever the owner is, gets to determine what you're going to do, what you're going to buy, who you're going to hire. There's just a completely different set and a lot more flexibility. How you do your purchasing, all of it is different in a private entity. Dan worked in a private entity. You can tell you there's a lot of things that are different in a public entity. And it's just the nature of how it is.
And I would say I understand that, again, looking at Brookside, and in a sense they are apples to oranges. Brookside and Gulf don't do nearly the same thing as each other. But they are both competing against private interests, private entities, and at the same time, I mean, Brookside can't just do what they want either with their building or with their policy without going to the Brookside Board and the County Board.
So the difference being, though, because that industry is so heavily regulated, the private sector has to operate by the same standards. Private sector has to meet all the same regulations set by the state and the feds. That's not the same at all. So that's the big difference, because that's an equalizer, because the regulations are relevant whether you're a private or publicly owned nursing home. You have to operate by all the same standards. Everybody does. That's not the same at all. And again, I don't want to get, you know, I can talk about this kind of stuff all night.
I just think, you know, and I already get to that, like the credit card fees. I think next month or soon, going into the winter when, you know, there aren't players on the course, I think we really need to have this discussion about where is golf now. I think it's in a good spot, but where do we continue to bring it? Which direction are we going to go with golf? And I think that discussion needs to happen sooner rather than later.
Sure, that could be on a future agenda item. Supervisor Berg.
I think another part of the whole comparison part is, Dan, how many folks, I don't know if you even have numbers on this, are coming from Illinois to golf here? 25%, 35%?
At least.
And I don't think,
50%.
And I don't, you said 29 to 50%?
Yeah.
So I don't think those same numbers are coming from Illinois to come to Brookside. I think that's more regional. And I might be completely wrong in those numbers, but I don't think folks from Illinois are coming to Brookside. So while we're competing privately against other, you know, entities in the community, we're bringing people in from outside further in golf than we are from Brookside. So it's kind of a really hard comparison to have on it. I am interested in seeing the study, though. Does that study talk about what other dollars are brought in, not only to golf, but to our local private businesses? And I really want to see that. That's what I think.
We'll be happy to provide that to you. Dan and I spent a lot of time working with the marketing department at Carthage College. At the time, they formed their own company called Velocity Marketing, and they did a study. It was millions of dollars that golf brings to Kenosha County. But as far as two supervisors on the bookends, we'd be happy to talk about this. I think that just the fact that in the last 3 years, we have pulled $1 million out, and to put back, we agree with you, we'd love to get it there. It would involve some marketing stuff and some changing of prices and things, but if we could get that way, there's one of you on both ends. It's both ends.
All right, thank you for your comments.
Maybe I should stop. I meant that in the most affectionate way.
Filter in place,
Jim. All right, we've been through golf to a fair extent. Unless someone else has a pressing or pertinent comment, question, or other, I'll entertain a motion to approve golf.
Second.
Looks like I have a motion by Berg and a second by Supervisor Rodriguez. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Seeing none, golf passes unanimously. Thank you. Parks. Who's going to present Parks for us?
I'll start. If you're looking at the numbers and something might not be total enough, I just wanted to note that the dog parks and mountain bike revenues and expenses are included in this portion of it. The overall levy for Parks has gone up 3.4%, largely due to the personnel increase. You can see that was roughly $93,000. Jim had mentioned earlier the new parks position. If you guys have any questions on that, or if Ray or Pam want to go into more detail on that, we can do that at this time. Seeing none, we'll just keep it moving. The seasonal wages, we have decreased that slightly just based on the historical data of what the actuals are coming through. The building maintenance supplies, we have increased due to departmental needs and historical costs. This also includes some of the new park features and amenities that you guys have all seen, especially lately, the two ribbon cuttings that we have had. The other operating supplies have increased based on historical data. There's just more maintenance with upkeep of the park. And the fixed increases are largely due to just the liability insurance. If we move on down to revenue, we'll see the snowmobile is roughly flat for what we had to what we're getting for that year. There was a carryover in 2021 of the $29,000 that we've not had in 2022, not yet. The parks donations is the same. And you will see a large increase in the park's revenue. This is largely due to the Silver Lake entry fees. $250,000 is what we believe a very good number of what we can continue to hit. We haven't seen any slowdown with COVID. A lot of people are getting outdoors, and we don't see that slowing down anytime soon. And that is what I have for operating. If you guys have any questions for that?
Questions and comments on this page that we're looking at currently, the overview of parks. Now we can move on to the next page.
Okay. Moving right along over to capital. Hopefully you guys had time to review, and we won't go line by line, but if you guys have anything specific that you'd like to discuss.
Supervisor Berg.
Parks 13, the playground equipment, where's that at?
Supervisor Berg. That's for Pepine Springs Park, area number 4.
Texas Pets?
Many members were part of the ribbon cutting for the Piper Phase 2, and you saw where we did the ribbon cutting on that new bridge. This is across the bridge and outside of the flood points. We had to remove the playground equipment as part of the Piper Phase 2 project. So the $300,000 is for new playground and repurpose what we can for existing playground equipment.
Thank you.
Anything else on this particular spreadsheet? Supervisor Franco.
Matt. The Shoreline Restoration, Kemper Shoreline Restoration Grant, where are we getting that from? Federal government, because I know recently the Army Corps didn't qualify. What is this grant? Can you tell us something about it?
You are correct. We did put in a grant request through the federal government. It's considered a BRIC grant, not to get into the details of that specific grant. But what that did, kind of similar to going back to the Pike River through the EPA, sometimes where you don't qualify for one item, it brings to light as far as a good project. and the right people start to hear about these projects, and you get your hand put back in the ring. The same thing happened through the state, through the Wisconsin Department of Administration, for that brick grant that they made mention through Senator Baldwin's office. Senator Baldwin has it going through the Appropriations Committee through the federal government as we speak. So this is not finalized as far as this project with this grant funding, but it puts forward this opportunity to go through the federal budget, the annual budget, in order to receive 75% match for the Kemper Center Shoreline Amendment Project. So that's a work in progress through this grant opportunity as we speak.
That seems like it's more than 75%. That's almost 100% of this
$6,000. I think Jim or Chris, you can show that the expenses carry from year after year.
If you look at the future years, there's an additional $6,000 that's included in that total.
Awesome. The 2.9 million and 2.9 million, we talked about 23-24, added together. So, yeah. Oh, okay, so we're talking 3-6, so it's 28-6-7. Yeah, I guess that is 71%. Yeah, I was looking at 2022. Okay. But still good. That's very good. We get it.
So as long as you're on the subject of the Kemper restoration, the shoreline restoration, describe to us the actual physical extent of it. Does it encompass the entire property from north to south? Can you give some?
Yes, that's correct. It's the whole entire shoreline from end to end. I think 1,400 linear feet or so of shoreline for Kemper Center and Anderson Arts Center.
Also inclusive of Anderson Arts Center.
Correct. Yep, the whole entire campus of Kemper Center, so it's both properties, which we consider one entire property.
So from the northern edge of Kemper to the southern edge of Anderson would be included in this particular item here, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you. Supervisor Frank, would you have something for you on it?
No, I'm good, thanks.
Supervisor,
I thought this was originally $14 million.
So there's been, I think, three phases of engineering that have happened since 2015 or 2016. Mm-hmm. If you really want to dive into what that real number is, what we found through the last phase of our study is the amount of debris that was added to the shoreline since the 1930s, 40s, especially the 70s, is there may very well be contaminated material that we need to get rid of before we can just cap the site. And that's going to be necessary for permits. So there's a slag material that's called from refineries that's left over from manufacturing. We're going to have to deal with that.
So the price has gone up.
Price has gone up based on a lot of contingencies that have to be put into this project.
Is this the same grant? Will you be working in tandem with the city then? Will there be any cost savings? Because they're doing the whole revetment as well right there.
We're not working directly with the city. This will be a specific project for Kenosha County for this one. But I know the city has also gone through Senator Baldwin. I saw him being mentioned through those appropriations. So it'll all be working in tandem. And we might get lucky that if we do have this happen at the same year, the same contractor will be bidding for multiple projects in the same geographic area.
Better deal.
It's a better deal because some of these companies, these marine companies, are international. And if they can pick out a couple in one geographic area, it could be advantageous even if you are bidding it.
Well, I hope that we are working with the city on that, then. Thank you.
One other thing.
Supervisor Franco.
And this restoration is obviously contingent upon getting that money, right? So if we don't get it, we're not doing it, right?
That is correct. Yeah, we won't be able to do it without their support.
Yeah, it's a bit expensive. We're trying to do that on our own.
Supervisor Nudo.
Yeah, a couple of questions. Can you expand a little bit on the number of parts tonight?
Yeah, so for Kemper Center, that's $122,000, Supervisor Duo, that you're referring to.
Yeah.
There's multiple projects. The main one out of that is for our exterior building envelope. We've been reporting on that through this community, through Frank Martinelli. We're planning on continuing building exterior improvements with water infiltration, especially on the eastern side of Kemper Center. So it's $122,000. We'll continue to assist with those building improvements in order to make sure that we don't have that infiltration. Also, we did receive federal funding through the city of Kenosha to help subsidize some of that project. That's why it's reduced to $122,000, because we're able to carry over $75,000 of revenue to help out with that project as well. So that's mainly for building exterior improvements.
And a number again?
That one's for multi-use trails. If you remember, we have a partnership with UW Parkside in order to enhance approximately 10 miles of multi-use trail and mountain bike trails that continue through UW Parkside and Petrifying Springs Park. So we're able to add approximately 148 acres of new wooded parkland to the general public. These bridges will help make sure that we can have passable areas to have a comprehensive trail network through both properties. So the $200,000 will be for the materials needed for these footbridges for our multi-use trail expansion.
And number 11, parkland revenue.
So that's in the budget on an annual basis. Parkland development, we show revenue as well as expenses to balance it out. We typically every year get waste management funds of approximately $75,000 for what we've had in the past as far as that revenue stream. And then we also have added revenue from Boundless Adventures and Petrifying Springs Beer Garden. That's also revenue that comes into Parkland development.
Do we know how much we're getting this year?
That's the estimate in the budget, is $200,000 for all of those.
Which I believe the beer garden was to be used towards the pass-through cost?
Correct, and Jim, correct me if I'm wrong, but that was paid off.
Yeah, that was paid off. Okay. And, sorry, I'm getting the playground equipment, we got what, $300,000? That was for number four there?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. $300,000 seems to be pretty expensive. The other question that I had, which I was anxious to ask, is Kemper Shoreline Restoration, so I'm okay with that. But at the number of parts 13 at the playground, I'd like to make a motion to reduce that more realistic number of.
So we have a motion by Supervisor Nudo on line item parks number 13 to reduce the expenditure from $300,000 to $150,000. Do we have a second?
I'll second for discussion.
We have a second for the sake of discussion. Why don't we proceed this way? Mr. Collins, please enumerate what currently would be available for the $300,000 price tag at Best Ford.
Absolutely. Without having specifics in front of me, keep in mind for these projects, you have to meet all sorts of ADA safety guidelines, and that makes even the simplest of playground equipment very expensive. And that's just the equipment alone. Now you take that and literally double it for the install cost from a contractor, and that's universal across the board, that you look at the cost of a playground piece of equipment, you're like, $80,000, and you get this giant feature and all these swings or slides. But then you got to compound that by what's typical for, you have to be a safety inspector and be qualified to install this, which is very limited as far as the people that have the technical capabilities to install playground equipment. So that doubles your cost right there. So for $300,000, I believe that's a modest playground budget for what we've had in playground number four and what we would be putting in and repurposing a lot of that equipment. I don't think that what we have in front of the committee this evening is anything grandiose. that with Petrifying Springs Park, we're on track for having 1.4 million people at that park this year. Playground number four was the highest used playground that we have in that park. And then equipment probably is from the 1940s with some of that stuff. So it's great that it lasted that long, but it was time to move on from that playground. So,
what's that? You're not replacing the Tilt the Whirl.
The Tilt the Whirl is now by number three.
Oh.
So you still have it. So there's a lot of variables that go into that budget. There's new features. We're trying to repurpose what we have to bring costs down. If it's still good and it's usable, we will be putting that back by number four.
So you're telling us, even as a county, we purchased equipment. We could not install the equipment with our own personnel. We would have to have an outside contractor to do it. Is that correct?
We would have to have a certified playground safety inspector.
And we don't have that in-house, obviously.
We do not.
And we're not going to end that to the budget, are we?
No.
Other discussion on this particular matter, Supervisor Rodriguez?
Thank you. You said 1.4 million visitors this year is what we're expecting. That, props to you and your team and the public versus the whole, that's amazing. That is a mind-boggling number. I would have never guessed that one part would see that many visitors this year. But I think that highlights the need for this playground equipment. It's the kind of new, you know, this type of new equipment is a draw too. There's a new playground. For those of us that were at Ribbon Cutting, we saw what a great location it's going to be in. That's at the top of the hill there, if you will. I'm not going to be supporting cutting this through what we do at the farm. We've looked into getting playground equipment and updating stuff we have there. It's expensive. I mean, it is very, very expensive. So much so to the point where you might have some words come that I won't repeat here, but it's surprising. I mean, the amount that goes into this, and like you said, the specialty kind of team that needs to come in and make sure it's done correctly. That you can't just have your average tax get out there and put it together. I think we've invested a lot of money in the Pets Park. We've seen our visitors grow over the years. We've seen the popularity of the beer garden. Playground number four is not far from the beer garden. I think we should continue the investment in Pets Park. It really is the gem of Kenosha County. So it's for those reasons that I won't be supporting producing it. I look forward to seeing this done, hopefully.
Further discussion on this amendment, Supervisor Berg.
Through the chair, Supervisor Goodall, you said that it seemed kind of $300,000 seemed kind of high, and $150,000 was more reasonable. Do you have just out of curiosity, do you have a bail and a vendor that you know about, man? As to thought, so it's just speculation. I got you, understand. Thank you.
Any further discussion on this amendment? Seeing none, we'll take a roll call vote. You're going to ask Supervisor Kowalski.
If
you vote, well, let's just state the proposition we're saying. The amendment would be to reduce the amount from $300,000 to $150,000. Pardon me?
I'll withdraw my motion.
Motion is withdrawn. Is it okay with the second?
Yeah.
It's okay with the second. Motion is withdrawn. We don't have to take any action on that. So if you take a look at this page here, as all the capital improvements listed. Are there any further discussions or comments by committee members? Supervisor Rodriguez.
Thank you. Let me see here. Going back to Parks 9, what do we foresee in years ahead? Next year we have in there projected $250,000 for the next 4 years. Are we done at that point? I feel like on the board, we keep pouring money into Kemper, and I get why. It's an important historic building, but is the end in sight?
No. I wish that was the case for any of our facilities. Ray, Mike Trans, Jim Kemper just mentioned all of our facilities, and Kemper Center is no different, and on top of it, it's a historic facility, so it compounds the effect of how we have to treat, especially the exterior side, when you have historic preservation and you have to follow a certain protocol as well. We do have a 10-year building envelope framework that gets us to take a strategic motion and go clockwise. We could take making sure we hit our most critical sensitive areas on the eastern side first and keep on moving around that building exterior until we get back to the first phase again in that year one. Now that year, or when we get back after that year 11, when we complete the whole entire building envelope, it should reduce that scope substantially because we took care of the most critical of things. But that doesn't mean that we're ever done by any means. So I don't want to misrepresent that even 10 years, that we can check that box and we'll be done, because that doesn't happen to any building per se. But these are necessary repairs, necessary for the functionality of the interior to have Kemper Center Inc. be able to do their events, their activities, and their resources.
So looking at Kemper, and the county's owned it for quite some time, did the county drop the ball at some point? Because it feels like all these projects, and staff has always been very quick to show us pictures and say, hey, this is real. But I mean, it's like bad, really bad, especially with the water mitigation that, I mean, did we put this off for it seems like it must have been decades that this wasn't addressed?
Because, yeah, so there was many, I'll just say that prior to the last, 12, 16 years, there just was a typical government approach. Most governments don't put money in their buildings until something blows up or it breaks. And that's just how most governments operate. We have not operated that way now for, we did a study 10 years ago on all the roads so that we could get a condition report on all the roads, and then we identified a sequence and we picked all those roads off. So we have tried to take and I would put our portfolio of buildings, with the exception probably of Kemper, but given Kemper was built a good chunk of it in the 1800s, so it brings a lot of nuance, so kind of put that off on the side. But our buildings in general, I put them up against any other government, any local unit of government, because we have done a good job of replacing the ceilings, doing all the non-sexy stuff that really makes the building last and protects the asset. The roofs, the HVAC systems, the exteriors. Kemper is a very, very old building, and although all the buildings were neglected, the fact that that building was neglected really makes it that much more difficult to get it back to where it needs to be and protect it.
Plus it's on the water.
What's that?
It's
on the water. And those nor'easters are, it's really abusive to that, anything that's down there. So it's a kind of perfect storm of stuff. But yeah, I think that overall, Kemper, as Matt explains, it really is going to be kind of an ongoing, but we've got at least a strategic plan in place to get the building envelope protected. We did do a pretty good job, I think, on all of the roofs, but there's some of those, because they're not your basic roof, there's some copper involved on some of them and some other complex kind of antique construction techniques that make them difficult to maintain properly. So because of all that, Kemper's going to just be something that, and that's why we put that kind of placeholder, that 250. We don't know exactly what we're going to do with it as we go forward, but we do have a strategy to protect the envelope itself, and we're just going to kind of keep picking away at that so we can preserve the building.
We see, not with, this is Parks 9, with the Parks 15 shoreline restoration, do we foresee, would that, would we regain some of what we lost in that storm last year, the year before?
So we will be bringing out, it's considered the toe of the bottom of that revetment has to go into the lake, but at the same time, the Army Corps doesn't allow you to go out too far into the lake because that is even compounding permits. So the short answer is no. There's no way to bring back what was already lost. But you can shore up to make sure that you don't lose any additional shoreline. So you go into the lake and you bury that toe in order to stop that revetment from bringing it back any more than it has to. But there's basically guidelines that you can't go out further unless you do a lot of engineering, and it affects a lot more of the residents on both sides of that property. We start to mess with the Lake Michigan corridor because it's very holistic as far as how one property may
Supervisor Decker did email some questions back that I just want to address tonight, so that hopefully we don't have it again on the floor, because I know that's what we tried to avoid. So do you have a specific breakdown of what was included? These are her questions, not mine. In the parkway, trails, honor plazas, what all that included for this year and what wasn't done this year for the budget?
If you can forward that to us, we have that and we'll send it out.
Okay. And I assume you send it to all of us then?
Every question that you guys ask, we answer, send it to the finance department, who, for this meeting, everything went to you guys because it had to come here. But eventually, it all goes out to everybody. When are we going to do that, Barna? Next Thursday?
Right.
This the end of this week, before the meetings start next week. So, yes, it'll go out to everybody. All the answers to all the questions go to everybody.
Are we able to answer any of these questions tonight before we go with them on this capital?
How many questions do you have?
That's one of two. The other ones were for different projects that I had.
Yeah, but if you care to do a brief overview, brief summary, that's fine, I'm sure.
I think I have the numbers here, but your question is what?
She said, I would like a specific breakdown on the Ocean County Veterans Memorial Park spending. What is included? Parkway, trails, honor plaza, etc.
What have we actually spent, or what the forecast, the budget is?
I'll drop this because at least this is her question and I don't know what she's
talking about. That's what I'm saying. Send it to us. We'll be happy to answer.
So let me ask this, and I know, Matt, you and I have talked about this, but like the electrical things at Ocean County Veterans Memorial Park. What was done? What's going to be in the budget? What's in this budget for 2022? Those finishing touches, if you would, that we got most of it done, it looks like, being out there. What are those finishing touches that we're looking for?
Yes, we could definitely answer that one. It's in the proposed budget. A chunk of the bonded debt for this one, $500,000 some change, is for a four-season restroom pavilion to be located up in the Honor Plaza area. So that's the bulk of the bonded debt. In order for us to obviously not have porta potties out there for ceremonies and people will be able to utilize the Honor Plaza year-round, so we plan and anticipate to keep that open and accessible year-round. And the year-round heated restroom facility would be part, the main component of that Honor Plaza for construction next year. Then you'll see a lot of revenue within that budget as well. And that gives us the opportunity for those six shelters that are going to represent each military branch. If you had an opportunity to look over the master plan, you'll see that it kind of made the shape of a star. And there's each point of the star represents a shelter for either an individual or a corporation to donate the necessary funds to construct those shelters. So that's the revenue put into the proposed 22 budget in order for us to receive funding for those shelters.
Thank you.
So my recommendation, Supervisor Rodriguez, put that in an email to Mr. Cuffer, so we've got a chain of documentation here. Then he can respond to us all with the requested information.
I've done that, and like I said, not my question, so you might have to reach out for clarification.
Fine,
So
there's like six, seven different parts, and there's prior years, and there's exactly what Matt said for the future. So it's easy to just put the whole thing on, send it to you guys tomorrow, and everybody knows.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
No problem.
Good. I mean, that's good.
And I'm glad you asked that question ahead of time, and not on the finance floor.
It may take a little bit of time, but the idea is to do the bulk of the work here in this room this evening, to do it in advance, so the night of the budget hearings, we're not going through this detail, it could be vetted out in committee. So thank you, Supervisor Rodriguez, for bringing that forward. We need to do it now. Anything else we should be talking about, Supervisor Berg?
Since I've been on the board, Kemper Center's always been kind of a thorn question sometimes, all the time. I'm always going to support the Kemper Center. One thing that I've asked, there's a way we can work with Velocity Marketing or somebody at another school that does something similar to that. I would love to see, again, the economic impact of what Kemper Center brings to Kenosha County.
Any other items as we address this capital budget here? Seeing none, motion to approve.
Motion.
Second.
Howell makes the motion. Burke seconds. Is that correct? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Budget passes unanimously for Parks. We're going to take a 2-minute recess here. Supervisor Newdow's recommendation.